141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard as we look back on a big weekend of international and lower league action. After Friday's late collapse, it's on to Northern Ireland at Hampden tomorrow for Scotland. Steve Clark doesn't think the Netherlands result was all down to substitutions, as Scott McTominay says there's no doom and gloom. And on the domestic front, Dundee United stutter again at the top of the Championship as Rangers women win the Sky Sports Cup. I'm Gordon Duncan, and joining me tonight you have Kenny Miller and Roger Hanna.
It actually seems as if an awful lot's happened since Scotland lost in Amsterdam on Friday night. We've had Airdrie beating a Welsh team in a Scottish final. We've had Louis Malt scoring from the halfway line. We've had Germany scoring in 7 seconds and Austria scoring in 6 seconds. We've had Gordon Dell exposed for not paying takeaway drivers. And we've had the Women's Cup final. It started with you walking Brian Graham's dog. It finished with Hearts accusing Rangers of defacing a club crest. And it's going into extra time today with Joey Barton and the Partick goalkeeper's dad involved in a social media spat. And can I just warn Joey? The man's a former world kickboxing champion. Just your normal weekend in Scottish football.
That's just quiet, not eventful, Kenny.
I want to hear about the spat. I've not seen this.
Oh,
Joey Barton.
Life's simpler when you're not on Twitter.
Yeah, it is. Definitely.
A bit like Brian Graham's dog. Sometimes you can bite off more than you can chew.
Right, okay. No, listen, again, a lot to. Again, we'll start for me. I'm starting to look forward to the weekend. I know we've still got a Scotland game tomorrow night. A friendly, which, to be fair, I think it's an important one for the team that they get back to winning ways. But my eyes are already at the weekend on the comeback of the club action.
Plenty of time for that. 01419511025. Come on down then and let us know what is on your mind. I suppose attention now turns to tomorrow night against Northern Ireland. What is the priority? Does it just become about the result all of a sudden? I know over the course of friendlies and building up to a tournament, there's a need for good performances and trying to build something. But is it now all about that result, trying to get back to winning ways? Does Friday change anything in terms of the approach, the team selection for tomorrow? Is there anyone you think needs to be given a chance? Anyone needs to be given another chance? Maybe people have played their way out of contention. How does Friday impact tomorrow, basically? That's what we need to establish between now and 8 o'clock. So give us a call on 01419511025. As Roger Hanna says, there were a lot of talking points from domestic football over the weekend, whether that was Lower League Challenge Cup, Sky Sports Cup. We had quite a lot to get through. So if you've any thoughts there, 01419511025 as well. Or if you want to start the earliest ever preview of a weekend Premiership card, you can. I mean, it's 6:10 on Monday night, so we've maybe got a bit to go. But if there's something else title race related out there that you want to share, you can. Maybe you Rangers fans are facing a nervous wait. I noticed Ridvan Yilmaz pulled out of the Turkey squad injured. So what do you make of that? These two will set the scene for you though. What was your result of the weekend?
My result, I'm going to go Airdrie. You know, fell one goal behind against a team that were on a long unbeaten run, and come back and won the cup. Again, just following on for a season last year that Rhys McCabe, first season in management, gets promoted. Now he's went and won a cup. He's doing a wonderful job. Got a chance to get an Airdrie into the playoffs as well in the first season back up in the Championship. So it's it's been an outstanding kind of 18, 20 months for Rhys McCabe and Airdrie.
The seat in which I am currently positioned, Gordon, will be filled on Wednesday night by a Mr. Marvin Bartley of Dumfries.
This is because the first ever Queen of the South result of the weekend.
Yeah, we're scraping it.
Unbelievable.
Desperate times.
What a week he's had. The reserves win 5-4 against a star-studded Kilmarnock team, and then the first team go and win 2-0 against in-form Alloa at the end of drill. Well done, Marv.
Anyway, what about your goal of the weekend?
Only one choice for me, Louis Malt.
Got to be.
Yep. Anybody who scores to that kind of distance has to be getting goal of the weekend. And even if there had been a Premier League weekend, I still think he probably gets a goal of the weekend.
Did you ever score from that distance?
Oh no, I'm not thinking he's shooting for there. I'm not one of the guys. I'm thinking about keeping the hold of the ball and linking up at that stage of the pitch.
Would it have reached the goal if you'd hit it from there?
Maybe back in the day. I think later stages, no.
What have you got, Roger?
As if Steve Clark's not got enough to worry about. What about Germany scoring in 7 seconds?
Oh, wow, we're going international
Florian
goals.
Verts.
Wow, okay.
Against France in Lyon. And then to rub it in, Kai Havertz saying after the game, we planned to do it, and watch out Scotland. We might do it again in the summer.
Well, it's got a loose Scotland link. I'll give you, okay, howler of the weekend.
I think I was on this maybe. In fact, I think I went Dundee United and Raith a few weeks ago for slipping up, but I'm going Dundee United again. No, they just don't want to be taking this title by the scruff of the neck. They've got the chance now to put a little bit of daylight. Obviously, Airdrie not playing. They've got, Raith not playing because Airdrie were in the cup final, and they just slip up again. I think that's three wins in the last eight games since Raith actually beat them. So it's no league title form. Luckily enough, on the other side, Raith are not taking advantage of their opportunities either. So yeah, I'm going United again. They should be doing better at the top of that league with the budget they've got and the squad they've got.
What about producer John? Falkirk's big day. They're going to win the league title. Callum Morrison scores four goals in the big day. It's a party atmosphere, and he misses it because he's away in a stag, as you said in the show on Saturday. The funniest aspect, Kenny, where can Falkirk tie up the league this weekend? Away at Montrose at 5:30 on a Saturday night. Copenhagen one weekend, Montrose the next for producer John.
And top man, top performer of the weekend, who's it going to?
Rodgers just stole it. Callum Morrison, four goals. Anybody that scores four goals is going to be a player of the weekend, no doubt. And he's having a wonderful season. So it's 21 goals, 21 league goals for the season, four goals. And it could have been the game that wrapped the league up. It wasn't. Hamilton got the job done against Cove, but Callum Morrison for me.
Nikolai Todorov. He is a match winner in a cup final for Airdrie. I think it's the first time he's won the tournament in 16 years. Rhys McCabe, youngest ever manager to win the competition at 31 years of age. And Todorov is a hero. Really good all-round performance. And he fairly tucked away that penalty.
Right, come on then. 01419511025. What have you got on your mind? That's what Roger Hanna and Kenny Miller had on theirs. But what about you tonight? 01419511025 or the Twitter at Clyde SSB, the Twitter. It's the kind of thing your gran would say, isn't it? But anyway, you get the gist of it. What have we got then? International football clearly still dominating the headlines. And it's all about that middle ground between Friday night and tomorrow. So what do you take away from Friday that you take into tomorrow? It can be good bits if you want, but of course there might be a few bad bits. Would you change the team drastically? Did Friday change anything for tomorrow? Is it now all about the result? Are there players that deserve more of a chance? Are there ones that need to come out the team? Has it changed anything after that late collapse? Because I think everyone who watched it knows it was a pretty good, probably better than pretty good performance for a long time. But the scoreboard made for pretty annoying reading at the end. So whatever you're thinking ahead of that, maybe you're heading along to the game at Hampden against Northern Ireland tomorrow. We'll hear from Steve Clark, we'll hear from Scott McTominay. We might as well hear from you as well. So how do you look back on Friday? What does it mean for tomorrow and everything in between?
I'm not too sure I've changed my opinion much from the show on Saturday, Gordon. I think there's a kind of middle ground of international football, and that's where we find ourselves. We're not in the elite, we're not among the favourites to win the Euros in the summer, but it doesn't make us a bad team. We showed up well for a long part of that game on Friday night. Steve Clark made changes. I don't know whether the changes were preordained, whether he was always going to make those changes at that time, regardless of how the game was going. But the changes certainly weakened the Scotland team. When Billy Gilmour went off, there was no one to hold the ball in the midfield. When Kieran Tierney went off, they lost a sort of balance in that back three. They never looked quite the same, and the game just sort of ran away from them in the last 20 minutes, if you like. Doesn't make them a bad team. I would suggest going to the finals, we're not going to be as good as Germany, but we may well be as good as Hungary and Switzerland.
So it was just strange, Kenny. I think that's fine to acknowledge that. Where, you know, it was a particularly good performance. We're not just talking about all right, we're talking about particularly good and then a particularly bad result in the last 20. So how do you reflect on that, and what does that do to tomorrow?
Listen, I don't think in relation to tomorrow, I don't think it changes too much. I think anybody looking at that game on Thursday night would have been looking at it. It's going to be a tough night. You know, you're playing against a good team. I don't think they're one of the elite, I'll be honest. I don't think they're the same level as France or even England, maybe not Germany either, but they're a very good team. It would have been a big result had we got a point, or I know there wasn't any points up, but a draw, had we come away with a draw, it would have been a big result. I just think that going into tomorrow, that would, you look at the next three games, you've got Northern Ireland, you've got Gibraltar, and you've got Finland. That's the chance. And if you look at the way Steve's kind of taking his fixtures, the real tests against, obviously, in terms of the England and France friendlies in the Netherlands, These next three games have to be confidence builders. They have to be building momentum going into the tournament. So it doesn't change my view on it. I thought we played very well for 70 minutes and then really, really poorly. Mm-hmm. You know what? I take that back. We defended really, really poorly in the last 20 minutes of the game. So, and we got punished, you know, and at the end, as much as we had some really good chances,
oh yes,
they had a lot of chances in that last 20 minutes, even more than the goals they scored. But for me, you've got to be looking at what was done well. We played really well against one of the again, in terms of name wise, one of the best teams out there, and we've done something we've probably not done at that level. We controlled the game, we created a lot of good goal scoring chances against a good team. So you've got to take that away. The changes came in, agree with Roger, they weakened the team and we got punished at the end.
What do you think though? 01419511025. How do you look back on Friday? What does it do to tomorrow? Get all your thoughts in right now if you can, whilst we hear from Stevie Clark. He doesn't think the substitutions were to blame for the late collapse, and he admits it's the players that have had to pick him up after the result on Friday.
No, I think it's the opposite way around. I think they've had to pick me up. I tend to sulk a little bit longer than they do. They move on a little bit quicker than I do, because I've probably got a little bit more to think about than they have. Within 24, 36 hours, you're ready for the next game. You're looking for the next game. I think I get the feeling, I get the mood among the players that they just want the chance to get on the pitch on Tuesday night and look to improve and maybe put right a few things that went wrong for us in the last stages of the game on Friday. It's a strange one because the first three substitutions I made within 3 minutes of them coming on the pitch, I think we'd conceded the second, so they didn't really get a chance to bed into the game. And then from there, the game ran away from us for reasons that we now know. I won't share them. People that know the game will read the game the same way as I read the game. It's a little bit too simplistic to say that the substitutions were the reason the game ran away from us. That wasn't the reason.
You have to bow to the Scotland manager's take on it, because he certainly knows more about that stuff than I do, but a lot of people who watched, and maybe it is due to our lack of knowledge, would feel that it was the substitutions that killed it.
For me, there's two things in that. Like, I don't think I agree with him what he says. It's not the only reason. What I don't agree with is kind of making that kind of reasoning that they've only been on the field 2-3 minutes, because that first goal was just simple basic defending that we never got right. You know, you have to move when Poitras goes, it goes out too far. Hendry has to move. Suter has to step in. The most dangerous man on the pitch at that moment in time is Wijnaldum. How many goals could we show Wijnaldum sneaking in and ghosting into the box and scoring for that type of position? He can see him. He needs to step over and allow Robertson to deal with the guy at the back post. That's basic defending stuff. So that's what he'll be alluding to. The distances are between their back line. Again, John, no tracking the runner and trying to play offside. It's an unnecessary risk that you don't need to take if you just track the runner. So there's basic things, I think, defence that they'll be looking at in those last and by not even the goal, there was even the chance when they scooped over the bar, very similar. No knowing where the runner is, no opening your body, no, again, communication will be key to a lot of that as well. So it's kind of basic defensive stuff. But again, I'm sure being a friendly, and I'm looking to, in terms of performance and looking to build into the summer, there'll be a lot of positive things as well that Steve Clark can look at and take for that game.
You need to remember, Gordon, the man who made the substitutions isn't going to say the substitutions caused the downfall. And also, when managers start the, oh well, football people will know where it all went wrong, you know they're struggling at that point. You know, sometimes you just need to put your hands up and say, we didn't keep it tight enough. They kept going forward. We should just have sat in and taken a 2-0. We were too expansive in the last 20 minutes. We won't make the same mistake in the finals, because goal difference might be important in the finals. And whereas you might survive a 2-0 defeat to Germany or a 2-1 defeat to Germany, if you lose 4-0, you're going to be struggling after match day one.
And I suppose all of that stuff, it reminds me sometimes of some of the discussions we've had, particularly about maybe Celtic in the Champions League before or whatever. That stuff comes into much sharper focus when you don't take your chances. Because even at 2-0, Scott McTominay has a header that's kind of up his street. It's kind of the one you'd expect to stick away. And then all of a sudden, being expansive or whatever isn't a problem, because you've got yourself back in the game. I know it sounds, you know, Steve Clark's talking about people being too simplistic, but try and do the business at that end, that it helps you out at the other end.
You know, it's a bit of a cliche, right? But goals change games. You know, they can flip momentum. You can not be playing well when all of a sudden you nick a goal and all of a sudden the momentum shifts in your favour. We were actually in control of the game for long spells. I've just wrote down there quickly off the top of my head, McTominay, two chances. The header that you referred to, when he cut inside, he should have released the shot earlier. He tried to reverse it back near post, it got blocked. Shanklin's really, really good chance. Again, a lot of people have been talking about Shanklin's chance. Why were we not talking about the McTominay chance in that same breath? I felt it was really unfair to highlight, and I know, oh, we need that chance to fault Shanklin because he scores it. But Christie had two headers. Again, first one he's unlucky, second one he should do better. And John McGinn's had two shots as well. One was a really good save that then led to Christie's header, and there's the one he tries to bend. We've created unbelievable chances against a good team. I can't remember Scotland creating that many chances there in any game, by the way, for that matter. Yeah. Never mind against Holland away.
I think we'll score goals. I think the team's set up to score goals. The worry for me is six games without a win and 18 goals. You know, the reason we're at the final is the start of that qualification campaign. One goal conceded in five games. You've gone from then to 18 conceded in the next six. That can't continue.
Yeah. Right, what do you think then? What do you think about tomorrow? Does anything change for tomorrow after Friday? What about Lawrence Shanklin? Does he need to play again? Does he need another chance? Or does he come out the team after Friday night? We've had suggestions over the weekend about changing the goalkeeper or mixing this up or that. But what do you think? What did Friday do for tomorrow? Did it change anything? And what would you do to the team? 01419511025, and we'll get you on next.
You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hannah and Kenny Miller are here, and they're waiting for you to get in touch with your thoughts on Scotland's performance and result on Friday and what that means for tomorrow. Would you change things? Would you mix it up? Do players need to do something different? Does it become now all about getting the win because that winless run goes on? Or would you be happy again to see a good performance as we tick towards the Euros? What did you take away from Friday? What do you take in to tomorrow? Give us a call right now if you can on that usual number. I did notice Steve Clarke was asked pretty directly, and he said it doesn't change much, but he's maybe going to make one fewer change than he was going to originally. What does that mean? What would your guess be?
It might be midfield area. I mean, again, there's been a lot of talk about how strong we are in that area of the pitch, and if he was to go the same again, it would maybe be surprising when you think you've got guys like Lewis Ferguson who could be, must be knocking on the door to get more game time. You've got Stuart Armstrong, can maybe feel a bit aggrieved that he's not playing, starting. So we could maybe make a change. I think he will definitely make a couple of changes. Maybe one in the back line, definitely. And it remains to be seen whether Shanklin. You know what, see if I was in Steve Clarke's shoes going into these games, I think, again, so what you're saying is if he's maybe just altered it ever so slightly, I don't think I would be. If somebody played particularly poorly and you thought, right, okay, we maybe need to take them out, or the other side of it, had somebody came on and made a real impact, you think, you know what, we maybe need to have a look at, or maybe need to give this guy a start and more game time. I don't think that was the case either.
No.
I think we played very well over a long spell of the game. When people came on, I don't really think substitutions coming on, the whole flow of the game had changed. So none of the subs really came on for me and impacted it in a positive way.
Maybe it's too obvious then, but just when you hear it saying, right, I'm now going to make one fewer change, just wonder if it's like, right, okay, I was going to not play Lauren Shanklin, but now after all this hullabaloo about missing one chance, he plays again.
You can make an argument for any three strikers. I don't think there's huge difference between any three of them. Take the striker out, the other 10 who played in Amsterdam, that's as strong as Scotland could have gone on Friday night. And had the result been 1-1 or even a 1-0 defeat, with that level of positive performance, Gordon, I think he would have changed a lot for the Northern Ireland game. He would have looked at the Lewis Fergusons and the Stuart Armstrongs and the Anthony Ralstons and the Greg Taylors. Now I think Steve Clarke realises that he can't experiment. He needs to win.
No, but that's the thing. He says he's going to make the same amount of changes as he had pre-planned, minus one.
I actually think the other way, Roger. You know, I actually think had they performed the way they did perform, I think he would even look at night, Bowie, yeah, we need to win. So, yep, we actually roll them out again. You know, like, I don't think the fact that had we not played, if we got done, again, we got done four, but I'd say we got a doing and it was 4-0 and we never played well, then it would have made that kind of hosty change. I think either way, like I said, if we had got anything out of that game, I still think we need to win this game. So I didn't expect him to make wholesale changes anyway. And by the way, he's not someone who's done that over the course of his reign as a Scotland manager, and I understand why. But even more so now, I think we do need to get back to winning ways. We do need to start spreading a wee bit of positivity about the team again. It's still there, by the way. But when you're six games without a win, and yeah, I take, we've played France, we've played England, we've played Spain, we've played the Netherlands, good teams. We've also played Georgia, and we've played Norway, you know, and we've not got them and conceded a lot of goals in those games as well. I don't think he'll make too many changes. Maybe two, maybe three maximum changes. But we need to win this game, and like I said, we've got three games now to build some real momentum. And you know what? This team are confident. They don't seem down at all. That they're really disappointed and angry after the way the game finished. But I still got a sense that they still believe, you know, they still believe they're a good team. You don't become a bad team overnight. But results is what's actually propelled us to some really, really good performances and results. We need to get back to that now going into Germany.
Jeff is on the line. Are you off to the game tomorrow?
Yes, I am.
Right, what are you expecting? What are you expecting when you get there then?
Maybe a goalkeeper change. Try to, over the friendlies, try to get the goalkeepers in. I don't think you really need to tweak it all that much. And by the way, I want to correct you on something.
Go for it.
It was two chances that Shanklin had. The one that hit off the bar and the one that he lobbed. The one he headed and the one that he lobbed the goalkeeper and hit off the bar.
Right? Can I just jump in there and correct you then, Jeff? Because that is a half chance at very best. It would have taken an incredible header for Lauren Shank to score that. But I get what you're saying. It's a chance a man of his capabilities could have maybe hit the target. I'll give you that.
You've introduced a good talking point, right. I think. Would you two expect... I mean, there are four goalkeepers in this squad. That does that not suggest that at least more than one of them is going to play over the two games?
I would think Craig Gordon might play tomorrow.
From the start?
Yeah.
I don't think he will. I think he'll stick with Angus Gunn.
Really?
Yeah.
Does that
Angus Gunn's not got a lot of caps, remember? And if he's going to be your number one moving forward, do we really need to give Craig Gordon his 75th cap when he's got 74? I don't think he'll change Gunn.
What's
I think
the point of having four to only play one? Because I don't disagree with that, and I certainly thought Angus Gunn was going to play on Friday. But you know, to call up four at a time when we don't really know, because there is that complex situation with Craig Gordon and Xander Clark and being club mates and all that sort of stuff. Call up four and only use one across two games?
Well, to answer your question, I don't know why he called up four. Only
now that he did, though, I mean.
Well, I just think getting Craig Gordon back, the only thing I can see is get him back in the squad, get him amongst the players, get him working with these goalkeepers over this camp, to see where he's actually at in terms of his performances and his work, his daily work. Again, I don't think, I think it's nine, ten caps Angus Gunn's got. He's going to be the number one going into the Euros. The more caps, the more game time, the more familiar he becomes with his teammates, the better place we're going to be come the 14th of June.
I don't disagree with a lot of that, Kenny, but I think you'll want to look at Craig Gordon. Craig Gordon, 15 months, has played three games, and the three games were against Spartans, Airdrie and Morton. If you're going to consider taking him to the Euros, and I think Steve Clarke and Chris Wood really are considering taking him to the Euros, you need to get a real handle on where he is physically and where he is in terms of his form. And I think they'll want to get a look at him tomorrow night.
I don't. By the way, they're going to have had 10 days working with him. See, when you're training every single day, you're seeing where they're at, you're seeing particularly someone who you know very, very, this is not an untried player. We know exactly the levels that he's
untried
been at.
Recently, though.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd have to say.
But I think you know what he's capable of.
I think they want him to go.
But what I'm saying is, you know what he's capable of. You know how he's trained. You know how he works on a daily basis.
Do you know what he's still capable of?
Well, that's what I think they can see that. They can get a good test of that for how he trains and how he works on a daily basis. Listen, games are not like footballers are not just at work at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. They're there for hours and hours and hours through the week, and that's where a lot of decisions can be made, whether you're going to play or whether you're not going to play. Or if, by the way, that's why you guys have trials. Let's have a look at them in the environment. Are they any good? Can they deal with a level? Well, we know Craig could deal with a level. Now they'll be looking to see, right, okay, where is he at? Again, whether he goes or not, I actually don't know. I don't know why Steve put four goalkeepers in the squad. Only he'll know that. I could only assume that it's to have a look to get Craig back into the building. There's no doubt they must be thinking about, will we take him, will we not? And that may be why they wanted to have a look at him over this camp. I don't think he'll play. Listen, he might play. Xander Clark might play. You know, he might change it completely, but I think he'll stick with Gunn because, like I said, the more time he has working with these defenders, the more experience he gains at international level, I think the better place he'll be going into Germany.
I've seen a lot of negativity. You know, why are we discussing that? Was he culpable for any goals at the weekend on Friday night? I feel like some of the reaction was as if he had a really bad night. Now, I've seen people say the first goal maybe, but... was there more than that?
Keevans was very critical on Saturday's show.
But that's what I mean.
What was the first goal?
Yeah.
Was he? Listen, I could understand to a little bit of the extent that maybe you could have fully extended and through. And that was a banger, you know. That was a banger, right on the end. And I heard people say, "Oh, wasn't that near the post?" I think it was pretty near the post, you know. And it would have taken a hell of a save to actually get there, you know. So I don't think he was. But he made two good, really good saves. That save for Depay when Depay rolled and he low shot left foot into the bottom corner. I mean, that wasn't quite in the corner. Had it been, it would have been a goal. But it still takes you. You're moving in another direction. He still needs to get 6'4" frame down that low, right in about his feet and make the save. So it was. I don't think he was culpable for any of the goals. Maybe he could have done a little bit better on the first, but I still think it would have been an incredible save to stop that.
Jeff, would you expect a change in attack? Does Lauren Shankland, because he missed two chances in your mind, one chance in Kenny Miller's
one
mind,
and a half.
Everybody's focusing on that. Does he deserve another crack at it?
Maybe play him again just to give him another chance. It's very hard because you've got good strikers. You've got a couple of good strikers, but you need to get them involved just in the friendlies, just to see how things lie for the Euros. But as I said at the beginning, I think we need to look at another goalkeeper, i.e. Sander Clark, probably.
Oh, right, so it's not actually Craig Gordon that you think?
No, well, Craig Gordon's a stick-on. Maybe one of the other friendlies, but you've got to give the other three goalkeepers a chance to show what they can do. And I think, as I said, Craig Gordon is a stick-on to go to the Euros. But if he plays or not, it's a different... Who knows?
The striker one is interesting then, because look, we alluded to this on Saturday. We created this issue. Everybody created this on the outside, because the whole Lauren Shankland debate or argument or whatever you want over the last few months has been built around this idea that if we get a chance, he's the guy we want it to fall to. Yeah, we know what Shea Adams and Lyndon Dykes have done to get us to the tournament, but if we get one chance, he's the guy it needs to fall to. He gets a big chance the other night and he misses it. But does that mean everything's ripped up? I mean, surely Stevie Clark will... Oh, you. Roger and I can sit back and you can explain. Striker's going to miss chances, but wait, is
and you
it
know
more than that?
When what you've said still applies. If a chance has this to fall on June the 14th against Germany, 0-0 in the 82nd minute, I know who I'm picking for it to be on the end of the chance. And it could be any kind of chance, by the way. It could be a shot for distance. It could be a one that just drops that he has to hit with outside his foot that we've seen. It could be a header where he bumps a defender and plants the header like he did against Georgia. He can score all types of goals. So that still applies for Lauren Shankland for me. See if you watch that chance. I know he's trying to just place that and just wrap it round. It bobbles ever so slightly just before he goes to hit it and he actually scoops it. So you see the way the ball's moving. It's not moving the same way as had he wrapped his foot round it and it would have probably would have dipped and it would have been a goal. He just scooped it. He was very unlucky. You know what he was trying to do, and he was just unfortunate. But the best players in the world miss chances. You know, that doesn't mean Lauren Shankland, oh, well, he's not as good a finisher as what we first thought. Well, he is. He's a very, very good finisher. And Lauren Shankland, come the end of the season, you could throw the other four or five strikers that are in contention to play. He'll have more goals than a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, we've always known it's a game of fine margins, Roger. Yeah. It just strikes you as this has been a really extreme example where if Lauren Shankland hits a shot that goes 2 inches lower than it did, we're all saying that this is the guy to lead us to the Euros. But it went 2 inches higher than that, and now some people are saying that, you know, that it's the opposite.
I think you're in a fortunate position with a manager. The manager won't really be swayed by the fact that hit the bar and it didn't go in. I would actually suspect tomorrow Lyndon Dykes might start the game, because Steve said before the camp they would all get a turn. Lauren Shankland started in Amsterdam. Che Adams finished in Amsterdam. I think you might see Lyndon Dykes leading the line from the start tomorrow night to give him a bit of action as well. These are the three strikers who will go. Barring injury, they'll go. There is no one else. Kevin Nisbet's injured. Ross Stewart's injured. Jacob Brown's injured. When John Carver was asked about it last week, he said the sort of next in line are Ryan Hardy at Plymouth and Tommy Conway at Bristol City, neither of whom have been capped, neither of whom have been in a senior squad. So they won't be going to the Euros unless something happens to this front three. Lauren Shankland's miss was disappointing. No one will be more disappointed than Lawrence himself, but certainly Steve Clarke will not hold it against him.
Right, if it's not all about that then, let's talk about the overall performance. Did he do enough to show that he gets another crack at it, or what did you make of his overall game?
Well, you know, I was actually concerned when I seen that he was playing, because he was going to be against arguably the best centre-back in the world. And I thought, you know what, see, for that to be your chance, where, by the way, everybody's called for it, everybody wants it, we've been kind of lobbying for Lauren Shank to be getting more game time, to be getting starts, and for this to get your start against the Netherlands away against Virgil van Dijk, I thought, I hope he's not going to be judged on this performance. I actually now hope he does, because I think he added to the team in the respect from that position. He's hold up play. I've heard people say, but it was only good in the first half. That's because the Dutch were way better in the second half, and we weren't as, we controlled the game in the first half, and to control the game and get up the field, you need your striker to be at the top of that, holding things up, bringing other people into play. And I counted, I think it was his first four or five touches where there was really his first touch of the game displayed exactly what I think Lauren Shankland is. He's running full throttle, but he's got a real calm head where he just cushions a pass into, I think it was maybe John McGinn or Ryan Christie, and we built an attack. The next one he gets, he spreads it wide and he gets in the box. That led to actually his header, where he actually took it in, he spread it out wide to Nathan Patterson. All these wee things maybe go a little bit unnoticed. See, if he loses that, we're not building the attack and we're not getting that header chance. I think he'd done, for what he had, I think he'd done really well. See, had he got his goal, we would have been saying that was a really, really strong performance for Lauren Shankland. But for me, I don't base it on that one split second where he missed it. I thought he'd done well, and I thought he added to the team in that area of the pitch when he was played.
Reminding me of God, you're good with these things. When Shankland scored that headed equaliser in Georgia November time, he wasn't in that original squad,
No, he wasn't.
He was brought in late. Yep. So at that stage, it was sort of 50-50 probably whether Lauren Shankland was going to go to the Euros for Scotland. Now he's 100% nailed on. He will be in the squad, and he will have a shout to start against Germany.
Thanks, Jeff. Enjoy the game. What do you think? That's a bit of a debate ticking along in a few areas. What would you do? Would you keep Angus Gunn in goal, or would you do something else? And what would that something else be? Because we've had various suggestions. And should Lauren Shankland play again, or does someone else get the crack at it tomorrow? Call us right now if you can, whilst I tell you about this.
Clyde One Live, celebrating the first 50 years.
Have you got your tickets for Clyde One Live yet? That's the big question. For the last 50 years, Clyde One's brought you some of the best and most memorable live gigs, and we're going to do it all over again as part of our 50th birthday celebrations. We're taking over the Ovo Hydro on Friday the 31st of May, and we want you to be there with us. The first three acts on the bill: Amy McDonald, Callum Beattie and Emily Sandy. And we're going to announce the final two acts joining them on the bill this Wednesday on Bowie at Breakfast. If you want to get your place before the tickets sell out, head over to Clyde1.com.
141 951 1025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Johanna and Kenny Miller in the building, waiting for you to get in touch if you can, on the phones or Twitter. I mean, suppose you could send an email. I can't promise I'll see it as quickly as the other two, but give it a bash. Get in touch and let us know what you are thinking. I mean, the international break does funny things to people. Roger Hanna and Kenny Miller engrossed in Cyprus against Serbia in the screen at the moment. Honestly, things you never thought you would see. It's 1-0 to Serbia for anyone that cares.
We're more engrossed in it than the Cypriot public are, by the look of things. Yeah,
14 people there.
It's not quite caught the imagination of the home fans.
Alex Gogic is playing though. See,
Alex Gogic is playing. Did you see
make anything about Scottish footballers.
This is how sad I am on the international weekend. Did you see Timuri Kitspaya, the Cyprus
there
coach?
There we are, another Scottish connection.
Once of Dundee. Mm-hmm. His pre-match press conference on the eve of the game.
No, funnily enough, it wasn't high on my things to watch over the weekend.
No one turned up.
Oh, that does make me feel quite sorry for him.
And he was brought into his pre-match press conference, and there was no one there, and he had to get up and go home.
Surely his press officer just says there's no point in going in there to me.
So hold on, this is
there.
A home game in Cyprus.
Yeah.
And not a single Cypriot journalist was there.
Right, it's actually been a really good game for what I've been watching as well. Some amount of chances.
So Steve Clarke thinks he's got it bad after Friday night. Think of poor old Timuri.
Oh, jeez. Anyway, right, let's bring in Jamie, who's on the line. How are you, Jamie?
Hi, panel. Good evening.
Hello, Jamie. What are you thinking, Jamie?
Well, what I'm thinking, I'm a vintage of 67 years of age, and I've heard Hugh Keevan's going on and all that.
You're a young man compared to him.
Yes, I know that, and thanks very much for that. That makes him feel great. But what I would like to put a total different spin in this game on Friday night, which nobody's ever mentioned. I've been listening to the show. Now, everybody says you need a bit of rub in the green, right? So if you take the two misses by Shanklin, just for talking sake, the two goals go in. Do you think for 1 minute Scotland's going to beat, you know, 4-0, which they wouldn't? At least they'd be two goals up. Now, I believe the Netherlands, they would have been shocked by that. And see, watching that game, I've watched it over again. See, watching that game, Scotland played absolutely brilliant passing, quick football, and I think they're up for it to beat any team, to be honest. Now, I remember a way back when we had John Warwick, Kenny Dalglish, Souness and all the rest of it. They were a great side. But see this side right now, I don't think we're giving them enough praise. One game you're talking about there on Friday night, okay, you look at the scoreline, 4-0. Now, if Scotland were scored in that game, we wouldn't have been speaking to now, as in, oh, what a disaster. And nobody said a disaster, that's my word. But you wouldn't be saying, oh, if we get called 4-0, because that doesn't reflect the actual full game. I had to watch it again because of what I've been hearing over the radio. Even with the pundits, I can't believe it. We should be in cloud nine now. We're getting into a tournament.
And you can't be in cloud nine after a 4-0 defeat. I'm quite an optimist as well, Jamie, and I love bits of the performance, but a 4-0 defeat's never getting you in cloud nine, is it?
Well, I'll rephrase what I meant there. We're getting into a tournament with a really strong team that I think could take on Germany and every other team in it. Now, remember, this is friendlies we're playing now, and he's still trying out different players. So, I don't think we're taking that into account. I think we're just ignoring that.
Yeah, I said this in the show on Saturday, because it's easy for us to use our own words. Virgil van Dijk said it was never a 4-0 game. Ronald Koeman said something similar. So, I do think we know that, but then it just depends how much weight you give, because Jamie's right. I mean, if we had scored, people are going to jump straight up and say yes, but we didn't. And there's a good phrase in Glasgow, yeah, if my aunt, you know, etc., yeah, etc. So you do see where Jamie's coming from.
I see exactly where he's coming from. And again, I don't think, from what I've heard, everybody's probably saying the same as Jamie. You know, it was excellent stuff, and probably one of the first times we've played maybe one of these. I think Andy Robertson was calling a pot one team, and actually for me dominated and controlled the game in that first half. You know, I still think we were good in the second half, but so were the Dutch. They had upped their tempo a little bit in that second half, but we still created a lot of chances. We never had the same control, but we created a lot of good chances in that second half. So there is a lot of positives to take in. And Jamie is also right. It might have spooked the Dutch the way it spooked the Spanish when we went 1-0 up, then 2-0 up with the McTominay goals back at the start of the campaign. So it speaks a lot of sense there, but you've also got to look at where we fell down, you know, and why we fell down. And that's all it is. The last 18, 20 minutes, whatever it is, was the only negatives. But the three goals we lost, it could have been more. Yes, we could have taken a chance. But again, I've said it, goals change games. And I know it's cliche, but when you concede goals, it flips momentum. See, for us, it was a really disappointing time to lose. Again, it's always right at the end of the half. It's a disappointing time to lose the goal, because had we went in 0-0, I still think we would have been super positive. However, we still came out and played pretty well in the second half, created a lot of chances. But we have to look at the next, because when we've played the higher end opposition, and yes, it's been in friendlies, we've conceded a lot of goals. And again, I'll just go back to Jimmy. He's not really looking at too many players, by the way. That's as strong as we could have got, in my opinion.
To start with,
yes, there's guys that are coming on. But see the guys that are coming on, Armstrongs, McLeans, these are guys that are over 50 caps. You know, they're not looking at these guys to see if they're going to play. These are guys that Steve Clarke has used. They're tried and tested players. And by the way, see, when there's subs to be made, these guys are the first subs coming
on. And you're going to make subs in a competitive game. Maybe not those exact ones. You know, Gilmore maybe stays on, yeah. Tierney maybe stays on.
Yeah.
The only thing, Roger, I suppose, I'm always wary about broad brushing everything, because facts are facts. And you look at the winless run and the goals conceded within that. Sometimes wonder if you just scratch a little bit deeper to some of the circumstances. The France game, which we conceded 4, yeah. The Georgia game, we conceded 2, the Norway game, we conceded 3. In all three of those games, neither Kieran Tierney nor Andy Robertson played. They didn't play a minute, yeah, across those three games. The other night, the majority of the goals are conceded again once Kieran Tierney goes off the pitch and once things change. So I wonder if there is a balance to be struck. You can acknowledge the failings, but I just wonder about broad brushing everything about the goals conceded in that run. Maybe doesn't acknowledge who did and didn't play.
Yeah, and listen, Jamie's an oasis of positivity. If you want to be positive about the Scotland performance, I say, Jamie, in the show on Saturday, this is a good Scotland squad. This is a squad that's getting to its second major finals in 4 years, or 3 years really, because it was 2021 the last Euros were played. Prior to that, we'd had to wait 23 years to go to a major finals. So we're positive about the squad. I actually believe this squad, as they are now, is better placed to make an impact in the tournament than they were 3 years ago. The players have far more international experience, not just experience of playing in a major tournament, but experience against big nations. You know, they've played Spain twice, they've played the Danes, the French, they played the Dutch at the weekend, they've played the English, they've played in big games together. That will help them going forward. I don't think they're as good as Germany. I watched Germany and Lyon beating France at the weekend. They look as if they're just getting their act together at the right time. But I do think Scotland can go into this finals in the summer with genuine ambitions to get enough against Switzerland and Hungary that it can be the first ever Scotland team to progress beyond the group phase of a major tournament.
Look, Paul makes an interesting point on Twitter. He's tweeted in to say, I think everybody's missing the point. With respect to Shankland, Dykes and Adams, the difference between Scotland and other nations is that we don't have a world-class striker and finisher. Now, I think we would all agree, but that's just the challenge of international football, isn't it? Very few countries have got the full package. You're trying to be more than a sum of your parts. Let's take your qualification group. There was a team in that group who do have a world-class striker. They've got the world-class striker in Erling Haaland. They've probably got a world-class midfielder behind them in Martin Odegaard.
Yeah.
But we overall were stronger than that. Not in the striking department, but overall. And that's just what you're going to have to do in international football, isn't it?
Of course. As in Georgia had
a world-class
Kvaradona
winger. Exactly.
But, you know, as a team, Steve Clark put Scotland together and the sum of Scotland's parts was strong enough that they got past Norway and Georgia and Cyprus to qualify. I think Scotland will win tomorrow night against Northern Ireland. I think we'll probably win our two games in June against Gibraltar and Finland. I think that will raise confidence from where it is today after a poor six-game winless run. And I'm not worried about getting into the finals in the summer. You know, if we're worse than Germany in Munich, then that's just the way it is. But I don't think Steve Clarke will be scared of taking this group of players in against Switzerland or Hungary. Far from it.
But the big question is, with thanks to Jamie, who will win this?
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
It's a tough school on a Monday night, but that's what I love about you, our listener, because you always want to test yourself against the best.
Did you say listener?
Listeners. There's one of them out there. It's only Hugh Keevans in his kitchen, but he can't phone in tonight, I'm afraid. You want to test yourself against the best. That's what people keep saying about these international friendlies. Can you topple Roger Hanna or Kenny Miller on Beat the Pundit? 0141 951 1025, and the lines close at 7.
Tackle the headlines. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Kenny Miller and Roger Hanna are here. It's 0141 951 1025, and we're looking for you to get in touch. The first hour dominated by reflecting on Friday night's debacle in Amsterdam, wondering what it means for tomorrow, who should be changed, who shouldn't, what does the team look like, what's it good at, what's it bad at, all that stuff. And if you want to keep going, you can. If you want to change the subject completely, you're more than welcome, whether that is domestic football, the Championship, League One, League Two card at the weekend, the Sky Sports Cup victory for Rangers, or anything else that you think we've missed. Do give us a call. I must admit, Roger, some people might have said it would be right up the Clyde One Super Scoreboard streets. It's 7:05. We've not had a single call yet about where you should or should not place your club crest bath mat. It just, maybe we're maturing. No?
Yeah, possibly. Possibly.
What, not, was it not the, did that make the back page of the Scottish Sun today?
Yes.
So it's a big deal in your mind.
Well, Hearts made it a big deal. As soon as Hearts issue a statement, Gordon, in which they use the word defaced, then that becomes a story. They are treating it extremely seriously, probably more seriously than I would have treated it, I have to say. But if a club is willing to, and I presume money has changed hands here, pass over their stadium to the SWPL for the afternoon, then they probably pass over the rights for the competing clubs to do what they like within reason in the dressing rooms. I think it's probably within reason. Did they not do it last year as well?
It looks like it, yeah.
Since the merger, yeah. I have to say, it wasn't an issue that particularly...
Wasn't one that kept you up all night?
It didn't outrage me or offend me.
How good a Kenny to lend his bath mat anyway. Let's play Beat the Pundit.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Right, let's go. First game of a new week. I'm excited to see how it goes. Ryan is on the line. How are you, Ryan?
I'm all good. What about you guys?
Not bad. Not bad at all. Now, I understand, Ryan, you're from Belfast, but you're going to be over at Hampden tomorrow?
Yes, travelling over. Getting the boat over tomorrow morning.
I'm going to... Oh, honestly, what a few boxes you're ticking. You're about to become... You didn't know this, but you're about to join the team officially as a pundit and give us the inside track on Northern Ireland. But let's play Beat the Pundit first. If it's heads, it will be Kenny Miller. If it's tails, it will be Roger Hannah minus one. I've just had a quick glance at one of these questions, which just made me chuckle. I hadn't seen them before, but anyway. Heads, it is Kenny. It's you up against Ryan from Belfast. So let's give Kenny some greatest hits radio, just so that he can't hear us. You got 30 seconds on the clock, Ryan. Just answer as many as you can and pass if you don't know the answer, okay?
No problem.
Ready? 30 seconds and your time starts now. Which team's conceded the fewest goals in the Scottish Championship this season?
Clyde.
Which stadium normally hosts Northern Ireland's home games?
Windsor Park.
From which club did Stephen Davis join Rangers in 2008?
Southampton.
How many European Championships have Scotland competed at?
Three.
What's the next line of the Allies Army Tartan Army song? We'll really shake them up.
Pass.
And name any of the English sides Steve Clarke has managed. Any of the English sides Steve Clarke has managed.
Oh, pa.
I thought you were going to guess one. Let's bring back Kenny. Can you hear us, Kenny?
Yep. Okay,
they're all along a sort of similar theme tonight. Well, not them all, but some are right up Ryan Street, some not so much. It was interesting. You ready to do it?
Yep, let's do it.
Your time starts now. Which team's conceded the fewest goals in the Scottish Championship this season?
Dundee United.
Scotland hosts Northern Ireland. Which stadium normally hosts Northern Ireland's home games?
Windsor Park.
From which club did Stephen Davis join Rangers in 2008? Film. How many Euros have Scotland competed at?
Three.
Complete the next line of the Allies Army Tartan Army song, We'll Really Shake Them Up.
Pass.
Name any of the English sides Steve Clarke's managed.
West Brom.
Who was the kit manufacturer for Celtic from the 60s till 2005?
Umbro.
In there at the end. Ryan, you seemed pretty down about your own performance there.
Rubbish, absolutely rubbish.
No prizes for guessing which question I knew was going to suit Ryan, but then maybe some of the others didn't. Let's find out. The fewest goals in the Championship conceded is Dundee United. Well done, Kenny Miller, 1-0 up. Ryan would have just had to hang up straight away if he couldn't tell us that Windsor Park was where Northern Ireland usually play their home games. He got it, but so did Kenny. Now, I know he's a legend for Northern Ireland, but Stephen Davis, it was Kenny that knew his old teammate, joined from Fulham. 3-1. There was still some life left in Ryan. He knew that Scotland had been to three Euros, 92 96, and they still call it 2020, don't they? Even though it was not actually played that year. None of you. I expected Ryan to pass. We'll really shake them up
when we win the World Cup.
Said with a straight face.
Andy Cameron, 1978 classic.
4-2 to Kenny. Steve Clarke managed West Brom, Reading, caretaker at Newcastle, I think. Not sure that counts. So Kenny's running away with it at this point. He even knew that Umbro was Celtic's kit manufacturer in that period. So Ryan, it was not enough. It's 1-0 to Scotland over this international break, Ryan. Is that an omen, or can your team come and cause some problems tomorrow?
Well, I'll tell you what, there's no pressure on us. You know, we're coming off a decent result, and obviously you guys are coming off not a great result. You guys are going to the Euros in summer, we aren't. So we have no pressure at all. All the pressure's on you guys to get a result, so I'm optimistic.
We've not forgotten about those Euros that you went to and we didn't. Where is this team at? Where is this current Northern Ireland squad at, would you say?
at a very early stage. A lot of youngsters, a lot of guys, that could in a couple of years be real star players. But not at the minute. No, with you know, Brody Spencer, he was obviously at Motherwell.
Yes, I do.
Connor Bradley, Trey Hume at Sunderland. You know, these guys are 20, 21, 22. So we're a very young squad at the minute. And like I said, we're not putting too much pressure on them right now.
There's not always a great deal of mystery when these sides meet, Roger, because there's an SPFL look about it sometimes. But I'm thinking more squad players. When I looked at the starting 11 the other night, there wasn't loads, but I think Ali McCann, Josh McInnes, Connor McMenamin all came on, and that's before he got to Caelan Boyd-Munce, who was on the bench. Kenny knows Brody Spencer well, worked with him at Huddersfield, yeah. Was great at Motherwell, and by all accounts has really kicked on since he's gone back. So if we, the last point we made before the break was about teams being better than the sum of their parts. I still feel like that's maybe what Scotland are going to come up against tomorrow. Not many of these players are operating at the level the Scotland's players are operating at, but you look at going to Romania on Friday and getting a draw, still feels like Michael O'Neill gets a good tune out of them.
He does, and listen, he's a good manager. That's why Aberdeen were interested in him, Gordon. You look at the squad the other night, and Ryan's right, it's a young squad. Noticeable goal scorer, Jamie Reid, 29 years of age, brought in from Stevenage Borough, where he's doing really well in League One under Steve Evans this season. No disrespect to Jamie Reid, but you know, he's not quite at the level of Memphis Depay and Danielle Mallon from the other night. So you would think Scotland would have enough. You look around the squad, I'd quite like to see Caelan Boyd-Munce get on and get a Northern Ireland debut. He's done well for St Mirren this season. But you know, in the centre midfield the other night was Jordan Thompson, who Kenny will maybe remember from Rangers. He had loan spells around Livingston and Raith and Airdrie, etc, etc, doing okay in the Championship. But I listened to Michael O'Neill's pre-match press stuff today, and he was talking about, you know, picking young guys from League One, picking 21, 22 year olds like Brody Spencer, who are trying to make their way in the Championship. Whereas at the minute, Scotland have Scott McTominay, and they've got Andy Robertson, and they've got John McGinn, and players like that. So the way we look at the gap between us and the Netherlands the other night, in terms of the evolution of the squads, I think Scotland should feel superior to Northern Ireland in terms of the evolution of the squad.
You know, Ryan's point though, does that suit in a way? That shifts pressure all of a sudden from being international whipping boys. Scotland have now got a bit of, almost, we've built up this expectation, but it doesn't always go.
Yeah, and you made a good point. You know, in 2016, Northern Ireland got to the Euros and we didn't. And at that stage, that Northern Ireland squad was ahead of us in terms of its evolution. It's swung right around now. I would expect Scotland to win the game tomorrow night, but they'll need to work hard. They'll need to play well to win the game.
What about your manager, Ryan? I keep seeing links with Aberdeen. Don't really know how much is in that.
I know. I'm not too sure. I've just seen a few things myself. But, he's keeping it a bit quiet. I'm hoping he doesn't leave, but the next tournament's not for a good few years away, so even if he does, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Roger, he was asked about it today. I think he's been asked a couple of times. The answers are kind of what you would expect. He's not knocked it in the head completely, but
no,
he's, I don't know, that's just what managers do, isn't
correct
it? They just deflect.
If I'll put myself in Michael O'Neill's shoes. I'm a year or so into a 5-year contract. I think he's the best paid Northern Ireland manager in the history of the game. Do I want to give that up to go and work with Dave Cormack, who's just gone through Derek McInnes, Stephen Glass, Jim Goodwin,
Barry Robson,
of course, and Neil Warnock? I'm not sure if I'm Michael O'Neill, I want to take that gamble.
Well, listen, I think it all depends on his circumstances. Does he want to get back into club football? Does he miss it? As the international, game, listen, it's a great job to have your national team managers, but it's not for everybody in relation to the time out with the game, you know, the time that you're not on the grass with your group. Well, it just depends how Michael feels about it, because all the things that Roger says aside, I mean, Aberdeen in this country, it's a big job. You know, it's a good job. You've got a good budget there. You should be competing. You've actually got a decent squad there. A squad that I've just completely underperformed for one reason or other over the course of the season. So, and it wouldn't be, whatever happens between now and the end of the season is not going to be on Michael's watch, really. You know, so he's going to have a chance to, if he was to take the job and be offered it, a chance to get in the last 8-9 games of the season, have a look at the squad and really prepare and build for a better season next year. So I still look at Aberdeen as, even though it's been a bit of a poison chalice over the last kind of two or three seasons since Derek left, I still look at it as a really, really job within our in our country that a lot of managers will really be interested in.
No Ross McCausland, of course, Ryan injured, which then that feeds back into the domestic football as well, and maybe Rangers fans looking at that lengthy injury list. Is that, I take it that's a disappointment, you'd have liked to see him playing at Hampden?
Yeah, of course. It is disappointing, but what can you do? You know, he's young enough, and I'm sure Northern Ireland will get plenty of use out of him in a couple of years. So yeah, no, gotten he's injured with a few bad injuries, like, but no, I'm happy enough with Conor Bradley as well. I know he's a fullback, but he can do that winger role as well. So yeah, looking forward to tomorrow.
Good man. Well, enjoy your trip. Thanks very much for taking part as well. That was Ryan in Belfast, giving us wee inside track on what Scotland might face tomorrow. Let's hear from Michael O'Neilly. Doesn't think Ross McCausland's injury is too serious, but we'll leave him out tomorrow. He says the priority at this stage of his development is to be fit for Rangers games.
I don't think it's particularly serious. It's a little bit complex from the understanding from the medical team. I think that he was optimistic, but he's played with pain since he had the initial challenge and the injury. I know that I spoke to Philip Clement, and you know they had him on the bench against Benfica, but I don't think realistically they intended to use him in that situation. So he's got a lot to play for between now and the end of the season. We're conscious of that, so we don't want to put him in a situation where, you know, we're bringing him off the bench and he's uncomfortable in that way. So you know, we just hope that he recovers quickly, because the most important thing for us is that Ross is playing for Rangers and playing regularly, because then we've got another player playing at a level, obviously, that we'll get a lot from that player on the international stage.
I'm just trying to imagine Rangers fans listening to that and hearing the very first bit, which says, don't think it's serious. Well, that's good news, but it's complex. I'm not a physio, but I'm never sure about injuries that are described as complex. It doesn't sound...
It doesn't sound great. And I just want, is he talking about the challenge against Motherwell?
I think that's what started it because he tried to come back. He has played
because
since.
He's not missed. I don't think he's missed any games. He was in the, I think he was in the squad for the next game, and he's been on the bench ever since, to be honest. So he's obviously felt he's
not
fit
drop
enough.
Out one maybe the before was it? The Benfica was it?
Well, I said he's been involved. Anyway. He's been involved anyway. So it's. It's been positive that you've seen him on the Rangers team sheet, that wasn't going to be a serious injury. But when you hear that, he's going to be left out with it. You know what? It's actually quite refreshing to hear a manager talk that way in terms of the relationship between the club and the country and the national team manager and the club manager, that they're kind of talking it through. And again, they're going to pull him out of the game with it. Like Michael says, there's no point in putting him on the bench if he's going to have to come on and it might aggravate an injury and kind of stop him playing in what could be a really, really important, will be a really important time, not only for him, but for Rangers as a team going into the last couple of months of the season. So yeah, it's quite refreshing to hear that.
Daniel is on the line all the way from Virginia in the USA. How are you, Daniel?
How you doing, lad?
All good. Hey, in Daniel. Here. What made you hey, call Daniel. Tonight?
Just to kind of, you know, speak in a more positive light about Scotland. I thought they were really good for the first probably 65 minutes. On Friday, I actually think it's probably the best performance I've seen from them in a long time, until the 70th minute when that goal went in, but the second goal went in. But I think there's a lot of positives to take from it, and it's not all doom and gloom. I do think we're a little bit naive. We kind of opened up and played more expansive after that first goal before the break. We maybe should have closed up shop a little bit and not been as naive, but I do think there's a lot of positives, and I think that, you know, that obviously we're having a difficult time with our striker deciding who to play up front, but I think there's maybe this might be contrary to a lot of people's beliefs, but I think Scott McTominay could play a striker, and I think you could maybe allows kind of Lewis Ferguson to go into the starting lineup. I think he was a striker as a youth player at Man United, and he's obviously got a knack for scoring goals, so don't know what your thoughts on that are.
Kenny?
Oh my goodness, no. Not for me. Not for me. Scott McTominay is a wonderful midfielder. Why would we want to put him up there to be a below average striker? You know, like, it's just, you've got strikers there that's their job. You know, I've never been a fan about talking about, oh, but he could potentially. No, these guys do play there. It's not about he could play there. Scott McTominay's doing a great job for us. By the way, is he playing up there facing the other way, it's a completely different dynamic to when he's getting on the ball and he's starting to move off and he can see everything in front of him. And what he can do is he can watch the ball going wide to an Andy Robertson or a Hickey or a Parson, and he can arrive in the box for that deeper position, like he's done so well over this campaign, and come up with some massive goals. Not for me, McTominay is a number 9.
There speaks a man who once sat on a bench in Prague while 6 midfielders played.
There you go.
Still gets them.
Still scabbed.
Still gets them.
Yeah,
Daniel, but I see where this is born out of the fact that we've got a lot of good midfielders, isn't it? And you're trying to find a way as well to get Lewis Ferguson in the team.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that we should do that. I think all I was kind of suggesting was maybe worth a try. You know, if it's not quite working, then obviously McTominay has got a knack for scoring goals in big moments. And, you know, it's just maybe something we could try. And I don't think it is the best option, but I think it might be worth Steve Clark trying, you know.
Yeah, I know what it is, Daniel. I've seen right through this. Words just reached me that although you're in Virginia, you're a Hibs fan. You're just trying to get Lauren Shankland out of that team, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a Hibby, mate. That's why I like Kenny. I think if we're going to Euros, though, like as great as we played, we are going to have to kind of sit in a lower block and absorb pressure, especially against Germany. I mean, they've got that boy Florian Wirtz, and then they've got the boy Musiala. You know, they're flying. That was an impressive result. So I'm a little bit worried if we're going to go and play that expansive style against Germany that they could do the exact same as what Holland did. But it's not all negatives. And
That's difficult though, isn't it? Because if we're saying that the sort of Hendry, Porteous, Tierney trio have done well up to a point, but ultimately that's going to have limitations. Are we good enough to sit and absorb all the time? And then you do that, you might only get one chance. And then we're saying that our strikers aren't prolific, so you're now asking them to take the one chance that we get. Are we not onto something the other night, although it clearly ended badly? Should we not have a bit of confidence in that midfield that we actually can dominate games and try?
100%. Because for a long, long time before Bellingham went off the other night, it was working and we were doing really well. And B, I'm not sure Tierney, Hendry and Porteous is the back three to sit in a low block anyway. Probably the overriding quality the three of them have is great recovery pace, so you can bring the play up a little bit. If you're sitting in a low block, I think Grant Hanley's the guy to anchor a three-man defence, I have to say. Maybe that's a bit simplistic, but so much will depend on personnel for that game against Germany. If you remember, Scotland lost players just before the last Euros, Ryan Jack and Kenny McLean, who had been crucial during qualifying, both dropped out injured. And I think it's not only Steve Clarke keeping fingers crossed nobody drops out injured, he could do with Callum McGregor back, he could do with Grant Hanley back, and he could do with Aaron Hickey back.
See, when you're onto a good thing, is it sometimes important to go and do that again? And I mean Billy Gilmore, really. You know, so if we're talking about a lot of the debates being, oh, you know, did Shankland work? Does he change? See, when you put in a performance like Billy Gilmore did the other night, is it almost good to go and try and do it again?
Listen, I think if we replicate the levels of the performance mm-hmm. the other night against Northern Ireland, we win. You know, I think if our best game turns up and Northern Ireland does, I think we win.
Specifically him, though,
Billy was excellent, you know.
It around
and I think the one thing about the wee man is he's always, always going to take the ball. You know, and that's what's something that, and I think the same could be levelled at Callum McGregor. I think McTominay was actually really, really good the other night as well, getting on the ball, making things happen. He's actually outplaying people in the middle of the pitch as well. He's got really, really good feet for a big lad. You know, we're talking about his goal scoring and things, but he's actually a really good player. You know, so we've got a good team. I mean, I've been a big cheerleader for this team over the last 4 years or so, and there is a lot of positivity. But what we've got to look at is, listen to there about low blocks, and it needs to be both. We need to control the game. Yeah. We need to be able to attack and create chances. But when you're playing against the top nations, you are going to be pushed back in to that lower block naturally. What we need to do when we're back there better is actually cover each other better, is actually defend as a unit. I really felt the other night when it's times, and it wasn't even just the second half. I didn't even think the first goal had a little bit of it. Again, Ryan Poitras is going out to cover. There was already a 2v1 on that side. He didn't need to move that far. When he moves, Billy Gilmore drops. Billy Gilmore should have been 8 yards further out, able to get closer to the ball. So there was a wee bit of this. I just think we're maybe defending a bit as individuals rather than as a unit. And that's something that needs to be rectified going, I mean, particularly when you play these big mm-hmm. teams. Because even if you're in a low block, if you're getting pulled out of position and your mate's not working with you, there's going to be big space in that back line, like there was for the first goal. goal like there was for the second goal. I suppose even the third goal, you could talk about that as well.
Daniel, what allows you to call Clyde One Super Scoreboard at 3:30 in the afternoon where you are?
Oh mate, we're on Easter break right now. So my old man, actually, I think he had a short stint at Hibs and Kenny was there with him, Brian Welsh.
Oh, he did actually. Yes. Absolutely, so, big Welsh. He's a centre back. He did, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Brilliant, big centre back.
Very fondly of you. So yeah. I actually really enjoyed your career, Kenny. You were a top player for Scotland, and remember that goal, that 1-1 against Italy. What a goal that was, mate. Big moment.
Thanks very much, Daniel. I appreciate that. Tell your old man I'm asking for him.
Daniel, brilliant. Nice to have callers from so far away, and hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Taking your calls on Scottish football. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Roger Hanna and Kenny Miller are in the building on that usual number on Twitter. So do get in touch. You don't need to be from as far away as our previous caller, all the way from Virginia in the USA. If you want to give us a call, whatever it is that's on your mind, now is a great time to do so. Whilst we line them up, let me give these to this question.
The full-time teaser with Universal Interiors East Kilbride, where their corners are made to measure, with wardrobes built and installed from just £8.95.
And for those watching on the live stream, I probably did just flash the answers at the camera when I waved a bit of paper around, and I am sorry for that. For other excellent insights to the show, please make sure you subscribe to that YouTube channel. You can see the guys in all their glorious technicolor. We've been ticking along since the start of the season and really enjoying it, a different element to the show. So make sure you head over to YouTube and subscribe if you haven't already. Anyway, thanks to Alan in Drimmen for sending this question in. Topical testing, but I do think you two will smash it out of the park. Since 1980, name the 8 Northern Irish footballers with at least 15 caps who've won the Scottish top flight as a player or manager. So, since 1980, name 8 Northern Irish footballers with at least 15 caps who've won the Scottish top flight as a player or a manager.
Davis.
Stephen Davis. He's got a few more than 15, doesn't he? What
just
is
a
it?
Few, 140. Yeah.
Just add a zero on nearly.
Yep. Hey, Martin O'Neill.
Yep, and one more.
Neil Lennon.
Yeah, easy ones to kick us off. We'll get back to it, I am sure. Now remember, Alan and Drimmen sat there, came up with a question, sent it over on the email to fulltime@clyde1.com. If you think you've got that in your locker, that's where it goes. fulltime@clyde1.com. And as always, thanks to Universal Interiors East Kilbride for helping us out with the question as well. Let's go to Stuart, who's on the line. How are you, Stuart?
I'm very well, Gordon. How are you?
Good, thank you. I understand you've got that. You're going to do that thing in the international break where it's kind of a bit international football, but it's really how it impacts your club side.
Oh, definitely. Well, obviously, the player in question is Yilmaz. Obviously, getting selected for Turkey. And just, well, look at Rangers. I think he's not meant to play, and then gets thrust in, and then he hobbles off after 27 minutes. With an injury, the injuries just keep mounting up at Rangers. But my point to that is, I'm sick of all this negativity surrounding Borna Barisic. Right, Borna Barisic will still have a very important part to play for Rangers in this running, and none more than now. So, I just hope all the Rangers fans can get behind Borna, give him that confidence. And hopefully it shines for us in this running. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's
yeah, I mean, we don't know yet, obviously, the extent of Ridvan Yilmaz, but fans like Stuart obviously have alarm bells ringing when you see him come off so early in an international game. He's sent home, and now we wait and see.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see again. It might be
a big blow for you, though. Or are you as confident in Borna Barisic as Stuart is?
You know, I think if this had been a month ago, then I would have been saying I don't think it would have made too much of a difference. I think Yilmaz has came in. There's no doubt he's, since probably, in fact, just before the break, actually, he was playing pretty well. He's been outstanding. You know, he has. He's scored goals. He's playing with a great energy. He's given he's not quite the similar outlet to James Tavern on the other side, but he's doing his job really, really well. And the only concern I would have for Borna Barisic would be, is where is his head's at with the fact that his contract's running down, he's got 2 months left. Is he agreed to go somewhere else, could he be potentially protecting himself? But if Young Maz is injured, I agree with Stuart, he's going to have a massive role to play between now and the end of the season in terms of trying to win leagues and win Scottish Cups.
Yeah, listen, I couldn't agree more. I actually can't remember a time, a season, where both halves of the Old Firm, when they're going for a title, have been affected by so many injuries. I was just taking notes. You know, if Young Maz is out for any period of time, we spoke to Ryan and beat the pundit about Ross McCausland's injury. Sterling was out there before the international break. Seema, Danilo, Ryan Jacks had problems. Cortez, I think, probably gone for the season. And just before the break, Cantwell was just coming back. So was Matondo, so was Roof. You look across at Celtic, McGregor's out just now. Carter Vickers has had terrible problems with injuries. Celtic have had all manner of people in and out of the team at centre-half. Hatate's just coming back into the team
Palmer,
as well.
Is he still out?
Palmer's still out the team. So, you know, there's injuries on both sides. But Yilmaz would be a blow. He's playing his best football. He's playing his best football of his Rangers career.
I had to double check because I didn't realise it was quite as extreme. Or maybe it's not extreme at all, actually. But, you know, Borna Barisic came off at half time in the win at Kilmarnock. You remember it, the midweek game? And he hasn't played a single minute in the four games since, but he's been on the bench. I actually assumed at some point he would have kind of came on.
Yeah.
Because I know Philippe Clement, especially in the busy schedule, he's been rotating a lot, and he had been rotating those two, but that's four games in a row where he sat on the bench for the entirety and Yilmaz has played. You read into that, I mean, it's fairly obvious he's got a proper number one out of the two in his mind now, does he not?
I would say that, and again, I think the fact that Borna Barisic's contract situation is what it is, that might be also feeding into it. But Yilmaz has been playing well, you know, so the way we're talking about it there is, and it's more to do with what Philippe Clement's done and how he's conducted. He's changed his strike. He's changed his whole front three at times. Borna Barisic and Yilmaz, that has been another position that has been probably chopped and changed more than most. And even in game, like you say, he's been kind of made to make some subs. He subs one on, he subs the other one off. So it might be surprising, but I think Yilmaz has been playing really, really well. So why would you want to disrupt that when you've got a player there who is contracted, is going to maybe be potentially part of the team moving forward next season, and you've got the other one who's running his contract down? Like I said, it's a dangerous time there for a player and for a club in relation to, like, what do you actually do? For the player's point of view, they might have something else already sorted. They might have something signed that's just no kind of brokers yet, and he might not want to kind of put himself at risk to miss out on the opportunity that's potentially there. But listen, if Yilmaz is injured, it's obvious Borna Barisic will now be playing against Hibs on Saturday if that's the case.
You think there's too much unfair criticism of Borna Barisic, Stuart? Where do you think that comes from?
Well, obviously, his previous games there, notably that Kilmarnock game, as Kenny mentioned, you know, obviously didn't have his greatest game. And a lot of Rangers fans are saying that's the last time they hope to see of him. But I think Borna's been a tremendous sell for Rangers. You know, just think back to that Europa League run, how good he was the 55 season. There's a player in them, and we all know he's a confidence player. And I just think so many games, eight, nine games to go in this running, a potential to leave Rangers as a treble winner. I think that'll factor in his mind, and hopefully Clement gives him the confidence and the trust to go in and fill that void. And I think it will do it for us, you know. I think he will.
I mean, Roger, there were stories about a move, wasn't there, just last week?
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, for what Borna Barisic cost when he came over from Osijek all those years ago under Steven Gerrard, he's been a good servant to Rangers. He's done well for Rangers. He's probably exceeded what people would expect when he came in the door. I do not see him at Rangers next season, I have to say. There was that talk in January about the Brazilian lads at Yefte coming in. I think they might reignite that in the summer. I would expect Borna to move on. But when he moves on in the summer, you know, it's not just Stuart. A lot of Rangers fans will thank him for his contribution. And he might, as Stuart says, still have a bit of a contribution to make in these closing weeks of the season.
Well, he'll have a massive role if Yilmaz is injured. I mean, again, it's one of them where, see if Yilmaz is injured, is the obvious choice, unless you're now looking at putting someone into a position that's not their position. And I think Borna's, he's shown that over the years he's been, I think it's his sixth season now, 2018, that he's won cups, he's won the league. And what, again, he makes a really good point, Stuart does, what a way to finish your Rangers career. If you could go out with another league title and potentially a treble, I mean, you can sail off into the sunset after that. So that should be there. That should be the motivation there, if there's any motivation required.
Thank you very much to Stuart on the line, 01419511025. We're asking the guys to tackle this full-time teaser tonight as well, as sent in by Alan in Drimmen. You can send yours in. I have to wonder what's going on, because we were watching some international football earlier. I've just glanced up and it appears to be some sort of now international wood cutting championships that we're on. United States look good, Roger, it has to be said. Hard to beat.
They're engrossed in it as well, by the way.
And look at that, they've absolutely hammered France there.
That's the kind of thing Mark Wilson would like. He likes all his outdoor pursuits now, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. You know, out walking, he's out with the dogs. I mean, you know, you see him pictured at all these clay pigeon shooting events, wood chopping. That's his next big thing.
Absolutely. Anyway, back to the full-time teaser. 1980, since 1980, name the eight Northern Irish footballers with at least 15 caps who've won the Scottish top flight as a player or a manager. Steve Davis, Martin O'Neill, Neil Lennon. I'll take one more each.
Kyle Lafferty.
Yes, Roger.
Jimmy Nicol.
Yes, which means three to get, and we'll get them next.
Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
I can't promise Roger Hannah and Kenny Miller will be focused on your calls in the last part, because the Timber Sports World Championships is going unbelievable. Poland have just been beaten by Australia in the quarterfinals, by the way. Incredible drama, it really is. Imagine the scalp you'd get. See, you're worried about ACL injuries, and you could lose a toe playing that, Kenny Miller.
The way they're swinging the axes.
He's a real warrior.
Don't give away the scores. Gordon Dale's recording it.
Is he?
Yeah.
Until, it's like when the old, if you don't want to know the scores, look away now.
Yeah.
Don't look away if you're taking part in Timber Sports. That would be my advice to you. Anyway, yep. Since 1980, name the eight Northern Irish footballers with at least 15 caps who've won the Scottish top flight as a player or manager. You've got Stephen Davis, Kyle Lafferty, Martin O'Neill, Neil Lennon, Jimmy Nicol.
David Healy.
Yep.
It's a 15 cap thing. I'm wondering, Conor Hazard?
No.
Is there a goalie?
No.
Oh, well, I had Roy Carroll down there as well.
I had Alan McKnight down there.
No.
It's one, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 3 to go.
2 to go, I think.
2 to go, yeah.
Oh, 8, yeah. So I thought it was 9.
Okay. Matthew has sneaked in on Twitter with one of the ones that you're looking for. But anyway, we will get back to Paul's on the line. How are you, Paul?
Hi, Gordon. Hi, guys.
What have you got for us tonight, Paul? What is on your mind?
Well, tomorrow night, I'm going to go take my son to my first ever Scotland match. So something I thought I'd never do. I'd never had any desire to go to international matches or that, but he was asking, so I says, right, we'll try it out. A wee change for sitting at Celtic. So,
well, listen, this team's a lot better than some of the ones you could have watched. Apart from Kenny, he was great, obviously. But it might not be a bad time to get on board, Paul.
No, well, I'm quite looking forward to it. Looking forward to the different dynamic. And it'll be different, because there's not a lot of Celtic or Rangers players in the team, so
that's true.
This will be odd, but I'm looking forward to it.
What do you think I need to kind of take into this from Friday then?
Well, I watched the game on Friday night and I watched most of it, and I didn't think Scotland were that bad, to be honest. What I did see and what I think happened, that some of the guys who play for the kind of the big teams in the Premiership, which is supposed to be the best, your Andy Robertsons, your Scott McTominays, I thought they were the guys that looked the most nervous. And they're the guys you look to have that wee bit more quality, which the Dutch had. I seen Andy Robertson sky across, McTominay missed a bad header. So that's always the difference. That the guys that you would expect that would be more comfortable playing at that level, they were the guys that but never really played at the level, which I was quite surprised. But I didn't think Scotland were bad at all. To be honest, it reminded me of watching Celtic in Europe.
I kind of said that earlier, but there were kind of shades of that Champions League, wasn't there?
So much good possession, and you miss sitter after sitter, the next one will go in, and then it just sucks the wind right out of you, and you know that it's just for a period you're going to get an absolute doing. But that's what it reminded me of. But I didn't think it was a 4-0 game, but maybe that's the wrong mentality that we go down. It was a 4-0 game, so maybe that is. But that's what I thought. the big guys. I'm not saying they let Scotland down, but they're the guys that you look to have that wee bit of quality, and I thought they were the kind of the poorest.
Listen, it might be a wee bit harsh on McTominay for me. I thought he played pretty well. Maybe more in the relation to the chances it had, because I thought in the goal scoring form that he's been in, not just for Scotland, but at Man United as well over the season. See, when he stepped inside with that one, when he stepped past the Dutch defender, I just expect him to slot it in at the far side of the goal, you know, and I think he just hesitated ever so slightly and allowed Reinders to kind of get back in and block the shot, but he chose to try and kind of be quite cute with the finish and come back a goalkeeper's near side. And the header was a good chance. You could see even with his reaction, he was really, really angry with himself that he never at least hit the target with it. So I thought he was pretty good, to be honest with you. And again, I agree, I think most of the callers have had the same kind of thoughts over the course of the night, that Scotland played very well. You know, we created a lot of chances, we never took them, and we got punished at the end for some, for me, poor defensive errors. I thought we held our own for 70 minutes and should have at least got a goal or two with the opportunities that we had.
Is there a case about deliveries from wide areas? Could they have been better?
Oh, yeah, they could. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And Andy Robertson's been a great player for Scotland, nearly 70 caps. But it probably wasn't his best performance the other night. Nathan Patterson on the other side, I thought, just looked like a lad who hasn't had a lot of first-team football at Everton. That might be a problem come this summer for Steve Clarke, because even if Aaron Hickey's fit enough to go, he won't have played a lot of football either. You know, we're talking about Billy Gilmore doing so well because he's getting a regular game in the English Premier League. That right wing back slot might just be problematic going forward. But I'm not too worried about Friday night, Gordon. I heard Hugh lamenting the result in the show on Saturday. I think we just suck it up, get on with it, try and win these three games, the last three preparation games before the finals. Mm-hmm. There's nobody going to come into the squad that we don't know about. This is a group of players who will go. And I'm actually more confident or more hopeful, optimistic, whatever the word is, going into this finals than I was the last time round. And I do genuinely believe we are not inferior to Switzerland or Hungary. Mm. If we perform the way we can make history.
I think what was interesting, though, off the back of Friday, was Steve Clarke was asked today, and fair play to him for answering it, because managers sometimes evade these types, but it was like, if you had to choose between performance or result, and he said result. This time,
of course,
but I wonder if that is in light of Friday and in light of this winless run continuing.
You know, I'm surprised actually I gave you that. I'm surprised he never says both, you know, because
no, I think he did initially,
because you were on the verge of that on Friday night, by the way, with the performance. And had you taken any one of the number of chances that you had, you could have had a result as well. But I think at this moment, he's probably right, because there's three games we've talked about. There's three games before we play Germany on June the 14th. And words that have been used with the Scotland team over the last three or four seasons is confidence and belief and momentum. Well, we've not won a game in six games now. We've conceded a lot of goals over that spell. I mean, just to go back on what Roger said about no being concerned about Friday night, I'm not concerned about us losing 4-0, but we have to learn the lessons in terms of how we conceded these goals, and we have to improve, because, yes, Switzerland, Hungary, I believe we are at least on a par with these teams. Germany, obviously, they are one of the elites. But if we're going, even against Switzerland, Hungary, if we're going to get the results, we're going to have to defend better than that.
Thanks, Paul. Enjoy the night. Hopefully your son enjoys it as well.
Cheers. Thanks, God.
Good man. That was Paul on the line, heading to Hamden tomorrow for
Scotland
the first time.
Scotland will win 4-0. Paul will get talked into his son to go into Germany this summer.
Don't get carried away. Let's wait and see. Right, so obviously about the international break at the moment, Roger, but for many people, club football's the priority. What should we look out for this week? There's a certain disciplinary hearing, is there not, for Brendan Rodgers? You might have heard about that when it started a couple of weeks ago.
Thursday.
Thursday's the day.
Lunchtime.
It'll be a lively show for us on Thursday night, either way, I suspect.
Yeah, I would suspect so. I think Celtic will go in armed with a defence dossier to try and clear their manager. I think they'll need to work hard to clear their manager. If the rule says you're not allowed to imply bias or incompetence, and Brendan Rodgers calls John Beaton incompetent, it would look to me on the outside as an open and shut case. But listen, you get to these hearings, it's never quite
never
as simple
know,
as that.
Yeah, there could be an outstanding legal argument that we're unaware of.
Absolutely.
That blows it open.
He may well be in the dugout at the Tony Macaroni on Sunday, and then at Ibrox the following Sunday as well. If we're talking managers, though, Any chance of Aberdeen appointing
one? Well, see, that was my next bullet point, Kenny, for the week ahead. We are now over 2 weeks on from Neil Warnock leaving on the Saturday because apparently Aberdeen were at an advanced stage in their managerial search. So, got to be this week, surely.
Well, you would like to think so. I think when you talk about managerial changes, that international break always seems a sensible time potentially to do one with, again, get the new manager in. He's got a bit of time on the grass with the players. He can prepare and get to know his squad. Well, that's not happened now when you're, you know, 3-4 days away for a game. So you would expect someone to be in the dugout for the Aberdeen game at the weekend. So, again, but listen, who knows? I think it's important. It's only been 2 weeks. You know, we talk about it as if it's been like a lifetime, you know, but it's really, really important. I think this is important for the manager, and we'll use this kind of phrase that we always use, the need to get the right man.
And let's look at that. We're pretty much at the end of the show. Not one single call. I can't tempt you with minutes to go to be outraged or care passionately about the Rangers mat on the Hearts dressing room floor.
No.
Definitely not.
No.
We've heard the end of it.
Certainly not heard the end of it. Can you imagine Stephen Naismith's face when the first question at his pre-match press conference at the end of the week is about a Rangers mat on top of the Hearts crest in the home dugout?
Well, there we go. Listen, you could call about it tomorrow in theory. I'm sure Gordon DL's got some really interesting thoughts on it. Funnily enough, he's on with Andy Halliday. It's probably his. He left it there.
I can imagine those two have got a Rangers mat on top of a Motherwell mat on top of a Rangers mat on top of a Motherwell
Andy
mat.
Andy would have the Hearts one in there though as well from his previous employment. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, let's finish off this teaser tonight. Since 1980, 8 Northern Irish internationals, at least 15 caps, who've won the top flight in Scotland as a player or a manager. Steve Davis, David Healy, Kyle Lafferty, Jimmy Nicol, Martin O'Neill, and Neil Lennon.
Paddy McCourt?
Yes.
Niall McGinn?
No!
Oh.
Mm.
You two are so methodical as well. I thought you were going to nail them all.
I think Roger had McCourt. Roger had them both. He thought that was it done.
Not according to Alan and Drimmon, who sent the question in. You're way off in your time frame. You need to
get back to 1980.
Pretty much, yeah.
Wowza.
You would not. I would.
John McClellan.
No, a Celtic player from the late 80s.
That's what I thought Alan McKnight was going to be.
Position.
Defender, I think, but you're before my time. Yeah, it was definitely a defender.
Anton Rogan.
Oh, there we go. Thank you, Roger. Thanks to Roger and to Kenny, but thank you for all your tweets and your calls and your company tonight. Much appreciated as always. And tomorrow it is showtime again for Scotland, Northern Ireland, the visitors to Hampden. How will Steve Clarke line up? Will he get the performance? Will he get a result? We'll build up to the game with Gordon DL and Andy Halliday, as I said. So make sure you join us from 6. And in the meantime, stay right there. Callum is up next.